You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, this is Frida Liu. I'm here with Helen Langhammer from Aspire Consulting, and it's time to raise your game. And the last time we talked about HBDI in Teams, and of course, this is how, and this week we're going to talk about how it can be used in defining management and leadership styles. But first, a recap.
Okay, good morning, Frida. Now, what is measured by the HBDI is our preference for thinking in a certain style. It's not our ability, it's not that we're particularly good at thinking, it's what we prefer to think. Now, the model that Ned Harmon devised has got four distinct thinking styles. The top left, the blue quadrant, deals with facts, figures, analysis. It also focuses on rational, logical, numbers, finance, that kind of thinking. The lower left is the green quadrant. It focuses on putting things in order, on putting them in sequence, organizing, planning. It's also focused on implementation and getting things done, on procedure, on rules, and safekeeping. The lower right style of thinking is red, and it's focused on people, emotions. It'll be concerned with empathy, enthusiasm, and expressing. And it also focuses on our spirituality and our musical appreciation. And finally, the upper right yellow quadrant is focused on the more long-term, strategic, big picture and future orientation. It's a style of thinking that's more spontaneous and impetuous, curious and risk-taking. Now, each of us has got the ability to think in all four styles, but over time we will develop a preference for one or two or three of those styles, and that affects how we behave.
And just before we got on air, we were just talking about how we can just see how, and we discussed this last week as well, about how certain styles would just come to conflict because, you know, they're not speaking the same language, so to speak.
Absolutely, yes.
Right. And then when you talk about leaders and managers, what's the difference between the two?
Well, in whole brain terms, leading focuses on things like our vision, our values, mission and goals. So from that respect, it is whole-brained. It's concerned with the alignment of individual, team, organizational perspectives. So it is whole-brained. However, in spirit, though, leadership is seen as being more right-brained and management is seen as being more left-brained. So, for example, the left-brained aspects of management would be the blue, rational, task-orientated thinking. Now, this fact-based approach, it can lead to a style that's perceived to be a bit authoritarian and directive. So left-brain management would also include green operations and implementation of plans, plus the enforcement of structure, regulation of quality and standards. Now, the more right-brained leadership would be values, vision and inspiration. Now, the yellow style of thinking is more open, flexible, conceptual and intuitive. Now, this is where our entrepreneurial, innovative and strategic thinking is done. And right-brain leadership would also focus on personal values and the interpersonal aspects of leadership.
And I guess we always hear the stories sometimes of the yellow style thinking. These are the ones that get the press and the publicity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're the risk takers now.
Richard Branson.
Exactly, Richard Branson, Bill Gates. These people are the innovators. So, interestingly, the number of U.S. patents held is about 90% of them are held by men. So, and that would tend to be held by people who have got a blue and a yellow style. So they've got the ability to delve into a problem, to analyze it, but also the ability to think creatively about the solution.
Okay,
very few of these people are women. So
right, because they're mostly red, I suppose.
Yes, we'll come on to that later.
So I'm going to say, so which style is the best? But, you know.
Well, obviously there is no best style because no profile is right or wrong, no profile is good or bad. Organizations generally are pretty balanced in their brain dominance when you think of thinking styles, because last week we spoke about different teams having different styles of thinking. For example, the finance team would be very blue, the marketing team would be very yellow, HR would be very red, and logistics would be very green. Overall, though, they're very balanced. So it is what this means is that it makes more sense for leaders of organizations to manage this diversity and utilize each style of thought synergistically. Now, when companies talk about diversity, they generally mean diversity of gender, race, age, or culture. It takes a pretty big leap in management understanding and ability to take advantage of the diversity of mental styles that people have. A single one-size-fits-all approach to management won't suffice. What is required is multiple styles, and they need to be applied situationally.
All right. So what would be the typical management style for blue quadrant thinker, and in what situations would this style be appropriate?
Okay. Now, when we think of blue people, they're very fact, very task-driven. They're very comfortable with concrete technical information like computer programming, equipment specs, stock market indices, things that I'm no interest in whatsoever. Now, the blue manager would gravitate towards the information side of the job as opposed to the people side. Opinions won't matter to the blue manager unless they're substantiated with facts. Now, this style of manager is often very comfortable analysing, thinking and working on problems. And his style of management will have a very strong factual orientation. People are likely to perceive him on the basis of work that turns him on, facts, figures, analysis. Now, if he also has an active avoidance of the red style of thinking, he may also be perceived to be a little bit cold or unemotional. Now, if people are not given feedback, their behaviour calcifies and hardens. Now, imagine if this manager, this blue manager, also had a boss who was blue. That's how you start a company culture, because, you know, people will tend to recruit in their own likeness, and, you know, they will, without a mechanism for feedback, this could be perceived as a very authoritarian style of management. Now, there are
I think of all the accounting firms.
There are times when this is appropriate, and accounting would be one.
Right.
But, for example, when facts have got to be analysed, say a manager has got to make a decision about whether to close down a factory plant or whether to expand their business. Now, you need that kind of cold, hard analysis of the facts. Or, for example, if problems need to be solved calmly and without any emotion. Now, imagine you're the captain of a plane and a warning light comes on when you're halfway across the Atlantic.
Oh, just ignore it.
Yeah. Now, you need to have the ability to analyse that problem calmly and rationally without screaming and upsetting the rest of the passengers. Now, if this style is employed all the time, it wouldn't be appropriate. Because if you imagine adopting this factual analytical style when you were counselling an employee who'd recently had a bereavement, it wouldn't be appropriate, would it? Or even if you were deciding on a company incentive scheme that's going to motivate your workforce, it's just not going to work.
All right. We'll go into other colours in just a moment, but I was just thinking of how I always bring interesting guests in Open for Business for you to analyse as well. And the earlier guest was a software engineer turned, you know, Sky Tracks adventure guide. So he probably was...
Absolutely. He would have been green and blue in the nature of his studies. But as he said, he was not in the least bit interested in what he did. And he realised that whilst he could develop a situational competence in it, it wasn't his natural style. Right. And his natural style is more red and yellow. I mean, there's nothing more yellow or risk-taking than flying through the forests on pieces of rope.
All right. And we'll come back talking about the colours, and I'll make sure to bring interesting guests for you to analyse every week. This time, I'm speaking to Helen Langhammer from Inspire Consulting. We're talking about thinking styles and management and leadership styles as well. Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9. Hello, this is Rita Liu in Raise Your Game. I'm speaking to Helen Langhammer from Inspire Consulting. We're talking about HBDI, the Herman Brain Dominance Instrument, and we're talking about how these thinking styles affect management leadership styles. So we've covered the blues. We're on to the other colours now. So what's next? How would the green thinker manage?
Okay. The green, bear in mind, this is still left-brained, so it's going to be largely conservative, risk-averse. Now, order and procedure would be the focus of these managers, and they will be most comfortable when the lines of accountability or authority and responsibility are clear. So provided they know that they're the boss, they'll be happy. Typically, these managers would be involved in work where work needs to be performed according to highly documented norms and SOPs. They will not want to experiment or do anything differently, so the typical jobs would be in bank management, production, operations or logistics. And whilst there is some interest in human resource, certainly more than blue thinkers or blue managers, productivity and perfection is going to come first. Now, imagine if you had a green manager, say, in charge of new product development and marketing. That conservative approach would be disastrous for a company. So let's look at the individual yellow and red styles. Now, the red manager is going to be highly participative and one who thinks of people as their primary asset.
They probably came out with employees are our number one asset.
Absolutely, yes. Now, red managers...
And meant it.
And meant it, indeed, yes. Red managers are concerned with organizational climate, training, the design of work facilities. They're likely to champion things like an on-site creche or healthcare facilities and so
forth. Nursing room.
Yeah, these kind of things. Now, imagine if you had a red person in charge of fixing that fault in an aeroplane. Now, the red people are very emotional, so they'd probably be screaming up and down the aisles and upsetting all the rest of the passengers. Or if the red person was deciding who should go in a downsizing exercise. Now, this is a pretty tough because in modern day business, red people do have to make these kind of decisions. But what is interesting is that it has to be said that red managers do have a hard time in getting promoted to frontline jobs. Mm-hmm. Their style is thought to be too soft for the cut and thrust of green and blue business. Often a red manager style will be seen as being out of alignment with the rest of the organization or with the key decision makers in the organization. So they can be sidelined, tolerated, but they're not seen central to the command decisions. Now, the yellow quadrant manager has a style which is very holistic, risk-orientated and entrepreneurial. They're likely to see things in a very global, visionary style. Yellow thinking managers can always be relied on to come up with a last-minute idea that will have the production manager tearing his hair out.
I'm just laughing.
Yeah, anyway. You recognize someone? I do too.
All right.
Their style is it's best suited to an environment of trust and freedom. Now, they need a boss who trusts them, and they will also be the kind of boss who trusts their staff. Mm. Fun and creative thinking are legitimate for the yellow manager. Out-of-the-box thinking is as important as technical excellence. Now, if you think about an organization that had a yellow manager in charge of production or in planning or being responsible for developing SOPs, that's pretty scary prospect, isn't it?
All right. Can we have a combination of styles?
Yeah, you can. Only 7% of us have got a single dominant. The rest of us are either double or triple dominant, which means that we've got the flexibility to use each style when it's needed. Now, the combination of blue and green thinkers, that can be quite powerful because it's very the characteristics are hard rather than soft. And this, interestingly, is the most frequently occurring male profile in business. Mm. It's green and blue.
For males.
For males.
But when you find that with women, there's always a word that accompanies that woman.
Yes, there is, but I won't repeat it on air. Now, managers with this style, they'll be seen as being very practical and realistic. Quite often, they'll be the type of people who have MBAs to supplement their abilities.
Okay. All right. Now, we're moving on to women. What's the most common style for female managers?
Well, not surprisingly, it's the opposite. Mm. It's red and yellow. Now, this style is seen as being more open-minded and flexible. It's more seen in service-orientated companies rather than hardware companies. So companies like my own, this management style would be strong on employee involvement, on self-directed work teams, a stimulating work environment, and so forth. Employees working under this style would have more freedom than they would under a blue-green style.
All right, and any other combinations?
Yeah, there is what I spoke about before, the cerebral style of blue and yellow. That's really the style of entrepreneurs because they can look at an existing situation, they can delve into the problems, and they've also got the flexibility and the creativity, conceptual thinking to think out of them. Now, they're quite different, those modes of thinking, the blue and the yellow, but combined, they are very intellectually curious.
It's very interesting that you pointed about the patents. The 90% of U.S. patents are held by men in this combination.
Yes.
It's very interesting. Yeah. Okay, and what about the green and red combo?
The limbic style. Now, the limbic style of thinking is the green and red, and it uses a part of our brain that is more focused on gut-feel thinking rather than the red and yellow or the yellow and blue, which is more cerebral cognitive thinking. Now, the limbic style combines orderliness, tradition, productivity with a strong people orientation. So, for example, there's a department store in the UK called John Lewis. It's very well known. Now, it's run as a collective and its employees are known as partners. So they have got a very strong voice in how the business is run. So you would find typically that people who are strong on red and green would be very loyal members of staff, and also companies that had that red-green orientation would be very loyal to their staff.
I think of Walmart.
Yeah,
as well.
Possibly. I think Walmart is probably more blue because they're renowned for cutting their margins. They're not really renowned for staff, how they look after their staff. They're more profit, which is blue.
Okay. What about someone who expresses a preference for all four styles of thinking?
Well, there's not many of us, or not many of them. I don't count myself in them. There are only less than 3% of the population can be described as naturally quadruply dominant.
Naturally quadruply dominant.
Now, that in itself can be a big advantage because they've got the flexibility to be able to think in all four styles. However, it can also be a disadvantage if you're not aware that you're quadruply dominant, because that can be perceived as being either non-committal or flip-flopping on decisions.
Wishy-washy.
Yeah. Okay. So they may say one thing one day and the other thing the other day.
Make up your mind.
Yeah, exactly. So what is required, not just of the quadruple dominance, but of all of us, is the discipline and knowledge to apply each style at the right time. Now, when we know our areas of strength in terms of thinking style, we'll be aware of our default mode. Now, that default mode may not be appropriate for every situation, but we need to be able to develop a situational competence. So the predominantly blue manager will need to develop a competence in handling people, just as the red manager will need to develop competence in with facts, figures and analysis. Their default preference will remain the same, but they develop a situational ability to think in other styles. Mm. Just as your previous guest developed a situational ability to think in terms of computing when his heart, his passion was not in it.
Was in the jungle.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of, like, if there was a person that sort of fits into this mold, maybe Lee Iacocca. I'm just wondering whether he would fit into someone who has all four styles of thinking.
Actually, there are a number of CEOs of organizations who have got quadruple dominance. One particular of our clients was the CEO of a large logistics organization. And actually, it was feedback from his staff that he flip-flopped on decisions. That it made him aware of that he did do that. So once he was introduced to the HBDI, he was able to compartmentalize his thinking
and realize that he was actually operating on four,
absolutely,
all four,
firing on all quarters. Four cylinders. So,
and it gets you a bit confused as well.
Can.
Schizophrenic almost.
Well.
All right. Can managers use other people to fill in the gaps? And is that the sign of a good leader?
Yes, I think it is. Now, as we discussed last week, the essence of good teamwork is to have everyone playing to their strengths, to our individual and our collective strengths. Now, it makes sense to have someone who has a natural talent for a particular role do that role rather than us struggling to do it ourselves. However, if we can at least try to think in the style that we lack and then maybe run it by someone who has got that style as a preference, so we're not seen to abnegate our responsibilities as managers. So, for example, imagine if you're a blue manager with a low score in red and you've got to deliver some pretty tough news to the workforce. If you can step out of your blue shoes and think more like a red person, design your briefing, and then run it past someone who's got that red inclination before delivering it, you're much more assured of a favorable hearing from your workforce.
And this is why they always get someone else to do it.
Yeah, it can
as
be.
Well.
It can be, because some people don't have the ability to develop that flexibility, and it is better to have someone who has got more understanding of that particular style to do it. For example, I mean, if I were to deliver a briefing on finance, it would scare the life out of me because I don't have that natural competence.
But I think also in this sort of situation, sometimes you do have to get out of that and show as the leader that I have
absolutely
to change my thinking style. Otherwise, they'll say that, well, you know, this guy can't handle the heat.
Absolutely. And I think that's the essence to good leadership, is to be able to show that you are willing to step outside of your natural style and at least make an effort. As I said, if you run your briefing past someone who's got that natural style before before delivering it, then you're much more likely to be successful in it.
So what happens if a manager moves on? Won't that upset the balance of the team?
Yes, it does. Now, since I've come to Malaysia, I'm aware there are a lot of expats who head up the big global multinationals, and their tenure is normally about 2-3 years. Mm. Now, what tends to happen is they set up systems and processes, and then 3 years down the line, they leave. So someone else with a completely different thinking style comes in and sets up a whole raft of different systems and processes. Now, any of us who've worked in large corporations will know that that is very unsettling. The arrival of a new boss can really, you know, set the gossip mongers working. It can, you wonder what's going to happen. So one way to minimize the upset is to run a leadership transition program. Now, during the handover session, we would compare the outgoing leader's profile with the new leader's profile. And we would look at what impact this new leader was going to have on the team. So we would analyze the gaps and we would manage the team's expectations. So, for example, if you had a very blue manager, people will expect to be told what to do. They'll expect him to be very task oriented. And he is taken over by a very yellow manager. Now, a yellow manager is not going to be quite so directive. They're going to be, well, do this or do that. You know, they'll be a lot less prescriptive. So it requires this style of transition program does require a huge degree of openness and honesty from both the team and the manager. But in our experience, it's a very worthwhile exercise because it minimizes the settling in period of any new manager and it allows the team to hit the ground running and function optimally much more quickly. Now, the more managers are able to acknowledge their own preferences, where they've got a natural aptitude and where indeed they need to develop a situational competence, the more flexible in their style they'll become.
Mm.
And in today's business world, flexibility is of paramount importance. For example, if a finance manager with a natural skew towards blue thinking can also think about the organization, can think about the interpersonal aspects and think about the long-term aspects of his financial decisions, they're going to be far more wide-reaching, aren't they? He'll deliver a lot more than if you just thought about the cold, hard facts and figures. Now, I'd like to end today on a quotation from Mahatma Gandhi. This aptly illustrates the need for leaders to be flexible. He said, "Every step we take, no matter how small, to understand the needs of people we strive to serve will increase our bond with them and move us in the direction of a higher standard of leadership."
Right, and I like what you said about the transition as well. And we've all been in this situation where the new boss comes in and we're like, what does he want now? And if you have that, it actually minimizes the impact and the productivity.
Absolutely, because people, it'll stop the rumor mills running. People will have the chance to express their fears, and it manages the team's expectation, and it also manages the manager's expectations because he will know which of his team have got the style of thinking that he lacks. Hmm. Or he'll know that, say, Tom is somebody, he's the person you have to be relied on for organization. Sally's the person to be relied on to deal with people and so on.
I've been speaking to Helen Langhammer from Aspire Consulting. We've been talking about thinking styles for management and leadership as well. And tomorrow on Raise Your Game, I'll be speaking to Shankar Santiram from EQ Training Development, and we'll be continuing a series on the 10 laws of making teams work. And tomorrow it'll be on the second law, the law of the big picture. Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.